I'm Dr. Stephanie Munt.
And I'm Dr. Ellie Summers.
And this is Two Women Running Their Mouths, a podcast for women who run by women who run. Our 80-20 rule, 80% dishing, 20% running.
Right. We are back with Two Women Running Their Mouths. This is episode 5, season 1, episode 5. Super excited today.
Very excited today. We have a big topic to tackle today, one that is very near and dear to our hearts. Today, we're going to be talking about something known as Red S, Relative Energy Deficiency in Sport. Steph, I'm going to make you start this conversation. Maybe tell us what Red S is.
Absolutely. Okay. So Red S, relative energy deficiency in sport, again, is basically just a discrepancy between intake versus expenditure. And why it's important and relevant is that in athletes, that is the opposite of what we want. In order to perform, to improve endurance, strength, power, we actually need to be in an energy surplus or a calorie surplus. And it's insane the number of effects that an energy deficit can have on all systems of the body. And I've just been learning more about this year and really opened my eyes to its impact on injury, it being probably one of the biggest factors implicated in injury. And just how it's impacting not only female athletes, but I think that's our primary area of concern for both you and I. That's who we see mostly. And so, we just want to get into a little bit more of why it happens, how to recognize it, and what we can do about it.
Yeah. What would you say is one of the reasons why you think it happens?
Oof. I think one big reason is just lack of awareness of how much we actually need. And there's a lot of other things that go into that, of course, but I think the combination of the pressure on women to look a certain way and to meet these certain numbers that are just unrealistic as far as calorie goals or weight goals, is part of the reason that a lot of us are in an energy deficit, and a lot of it's unintentional. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that energy deficit in general in a lot of sport, even beyond running, is so common and pervasive, quite frankly. People don't even realize that this can play a huge role in all aspects of their life, in I think culturally speaking, outside of the sport of running, women are just exposed to narratives that encourage thinness, smallness, diet, culture, things that don't put us in a great position to succeed on a performance standpoint. And so, I think there's a lot of nuance there, but that to me is one of the primary things that I see. Is sort of just this oppressive style of language around a female athlete's body and what she needs to look like to be a good performer, which leads to then, behavioral changes. And we know those start really, really young. They start in teenagers, whether that's dietary restrictions, cutting out things like meat or gluten. All of these things show up in women of all ages, but I think these sort of narratives and the behavior changes take place really young. And that just sets the stage for energy deficiency to be happening, because a lot of athletes don't understand how much energy is actually needed to perform on certain levels. And it's a lot of food, a lot of calories. And that carries a lot of weight if you have body image issues, figuratively and literally. It's a hard topic to discuss sometimes when, as a person, if you're feeling insecure in how your body looks, how that could be impacting your performance in the end. It's just a tricky place to take things. And, you know, with, you know, relative energy deficiency in sport, this term was sort of coined to help folks understand that it moves beyond the female athlete triad. And the triad, I think, I would like to think that more people are familiar with the triad. If you're unfamiliar with the triad, do you think you want to explain what the triad is, Steph?
Sure. Yeah. I think you're right that people are more familiar with that. And I think that was a good starting point for what clinicians were probably recognizing, but it wasn't encompassing enough of everything that was going on, because the triad, obviously three things, was poor bone health, menstrual dysfunction, and then disordered eating or lack of nutrition. Whereas I think what we're finding now is that there's a lot of gray area between an eating disorder and disordered eating. And, you know, you may have disordered eating habits that don't necessarily qualify you for an eating disorder. And to some extent, I think most women have some food issues and fears because of how we feel about our bodies and how basically we've been, I don't want to say taught to, but just diet culture, like you said, and all that has contributed to comfort in our own bodies and in the amount that we eat. So anyway, I think you're right. That's a good starting point. But the point of this new term or this new syndrome, really, of Red S, is to really factor in all of these systems. That consensus statement that we can attach in the show notes highlights how many bodily systems that an energy deficiency, intentional or not, can impact.
Yeah, it impacts everything. So just for those of you listening, it will impact every bodily system and the way that that system functions when you're in an energy deficiency. And as we know, as physical therapists, it drastically increases your risk for injury, specifically bone stress injuries. And maybe we'll save an episode to talk specifically about bone stress injuries moving forward. But know that it's a very serious thing and something that we as clinicians and coaches care deeply about in changing the culture, hopefully changing some of our athletes' minds and attitudes around it to a certain extent. So know that it can impact every system in your body and how it functions. Not to be too alarmist or scary. It's true.
Right. And it's just that important to address. And I think a tricky part for physical therapists is like how much is outside of our scope versus what can we actually influence. And to me, just because it's outside of our scope to give calorie estimations or nutritional advice that's specific to this, I think we can ask certain questions to guide us into a referral, and it's still our responsibility to make sure this athlete is as healthy as possible. And where I get frustrated, I guess, is when our profession is pinpointing an injury on an excess pronation on one side, or glute weakness, you know, we have episode about hips on one side, or lack of hip extension on one side, when there are other things that we really need to be recognizing that could be addressed. And it's just more empowering and just better overall for the athlete to say, hey, you need to address this part. We have some other work we can do as far as this injury goes, but this is going to be what's key for your long-term health, rather than nitpicking these little things about structure or the way someone moves. It just doesn't make sense.
Yes, I think that is a very unfortunate result of injury sometimes, especially in the running world, that athlete will get a stress fracture and that stress fracture will be immediately blamed on what you're saying, like a mechanical fault. And that to me is just like almost never the case. That's maybe a huge bias of mine that I'm bringing to the table, but we just know that when you have a stress fracture, there's something that's leading to the point where the bone is not adapting. And you have to consider why that might be.
Yeah. And I think coming back to these basic things and making sure that we understand that these basic things like an energy deficit can contribute strongly to injury will just make us more effective clinicians for long-term health.
Yeah, and you have to be able to have those conversations. I think as a coach and a physical therapist, you can't back down from asking somebody about their fueling habits. You know, I've had runners who were fasting before they would run, and sometimes you just don't know until you ask, you know, what are you doing? And if you're not asking those questions, you're missing huge opportunities and potentially setting an athlete up for ongoing challenges down the road and without addressing the actual root cause. So for athletes that are out there wondering, you know, what do I do? How do I know if I have it? What are some of the things that I need to be considering? What is something that you would say to those folks?
So I think this is tricky too, because there's a myriad of things. First and foremost, your period is going to be a sign of health. Now this gets tricky when we bring in birth control, whether it's oral, IUD, or when we get into menopause, obviously, but generally, for the female athlete who's not on birth control, your period is going to be a marker of your health. And typically, that's going to be one of the first things to go when your body's in an energy deficit. You know, it's going to, our bodies are meant to try to keep us alive and preserve, and reproduction may not be a necessary function when you get to a certain point. So, keeping track of your periods is important. And just noting whether you're having one, obviously, first of all. And then if they're regular, irregular, how you're feeling with that. Other than that, I think fatigue is a strong one, which is tricky, again, because we have so many ways to keep ourselves awake during the day. There's so many other things that can affect fatigue. But that recurrent injury, I think, is a big red flag. If you're one of those people who just keeps, you can't seem to stay healthy for longer than a few months.
It can be more than just stress fractures. It can be other types of injuries as well, just to be clear.
Definitely. Yeah. What else do you have?
Yeah. I mean, I think those are some big ones. You know, if you're not hitting your workouts consistently, that can be like a little bit of a red flag where it's like, okay, this person is, I'm going to, you know, air quote, failing their workout every time, or not feeling like their legs are turning over very strong, or they're feeling tired or fatigued. These can be kind of some of those early warning signs, but I think the big one for female athletes or menstruating athletes specifically is whether or not they're having a period. And that, as you had mentioned, you know, if you're on birth control, you may not know if you're having a period or not, because you just don't have periods when you're on birth control a lot of the time, depending on the type of birth control. So it comes down to then considering these other variables sort of outside of that one specific piece. And I think fatigue is a big one. Performance declines are a big one. Sometimes you'll have a performance bump and you'll be feeling great, and then all of a sudden the performance decline. Weight loss too, I think, is sort of, it's like a flag for me. You know, when I took my coaching certification and I was at a course with other coaches, it blew me away hearing other coaches talk about how certain athletes needed to lose weight in order to perform. You know, and I think that there's a lot to unpack there too, but as a coach myself, it's never something that I'm encouraging in my athletes. And I think that it can be an early sign or potentially a late sign that something's not right, that the balance is off effectively. So those are all things to be considering. You know, I think it's normal that when you're in peak training, you might have some changes to your body that occur. I think it's abnormal to have really drastic changes, and to be experiencing a lot of fatigue. There's also other signs like emotional, and psychological well-being declines. So whether or not you're feeling more irritable, maybe you're depressed or more anxious, those can also be warning signs of relative energy deficiency in sport. At the end of the day, this is not an easy diagnosis to come across because it is a huge umbrella term. You know, you can have missing period, an unexplained missing period, and feel totally fine in all these other realms. You can be maybe a little bit grumpy and be totally fine in all the other realms. So it's a very difficult, I think, diagnosis to receive because there's so much context that has to be filled in behind it. Yeah. What would you say, you know, if an athlete thinks they have relative energy deficiency in sport, is there any way to know for sure?
I'm not sure that there is. That's one of the trickiest parts. There's no specific criteria. There are some equations. This is where seeing an RD who's familiar with relative energy deficiency in sport would be super helpful, because there are some basic numbers. You could calculate 45 kilocalories per kilogram of fat-free mass is really where you want to be to have an energy surplus. But again, we don't know. I mean, you have to get a calculation of your fat-free mass, and then everyone's going to be a little bit different too. We do know that dropping below 30 kilocalories per kilogram of fat-free mass, and again, then you have to do your calculation. why don't we use the metric system?
Yeah, working with an RD, it's like,
yes, exactly.
The
exactly. Yes, yes.
Registered dietitian, and there's a difference between a registered dietitian and a nutritionist on this front. And we really advocate working with a registered dietitian on these particular things. Because the big thing is too, you know, if you have a history of eating disorder and you have a coach telling you to count calories, there can be problems with that as well. So really encourage folks to work with a professional. And I think that, you know, if I had my way, every single athlete I work with would have an RD on speed dial.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, 100%.
Yeah, working towards that on the squad.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to hire one in the CSU.
No kidding, yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I think there's just not enough right or accurate information out there for us to do it ourselves. And it's coming back to ways to recognize it. I think one of the things that Becca McConville has a Red S course that I took, and she did emphasize those changes, like you mentioned. So especially as your training ramps up, you know, if you're running a lot more than usual, you're probably going to need to be eating more than usual.
Yeah.
Not probably, you are.
You will.
And she mentioned that the changes are a big thing too. And along with that, you know, GI disturbances, sleep disturbances, sometimes we see changes in thyroid. So there's a lot of context, a lot of other things that could be going on. So that's where an RD is your best bet.
Exactly. What would you say would be like the next steps if somebody's like suspicious that this could be something they're dealing with? What would be next steps? Or maybe they have an injury and they're wondering, is this something that potentially led me down this path?
I think if you have a registered dietitian in your network, I'd reach out to them. If you're not sure who to go to, you can reach out to either of us and we can help direct you to the right place. We both, I think, know a few good RDs who are knowledgeable in this realm. So I think that would be the first place to go, is just, you know, ask for help and trust your instincts too.
Right.
I think it can be difficult to think, and I know I've had difficulty with this too, like, I don't want to eat more. I'm like, for me, having a history of disordered eating, I already am like, okay, this is a comfortable spot for me. Like, why should I be eating more? But you will feel better for the most part. I think that's what I've heard from a lot of people. They feel a lot better. I've noticed that too. You know, if you feel flat before all your workouts and you're just tired throughout the day, especially eating around your workout, that's been a big change for me. So just know that, you know, if there is some fear there may want to, again, there's a lot to unpack with that.
Right.
And a counselor may be a good place to go for those fears and thoughts as well. But it can only, pretty much can only go up. And yeah. there's really no excessive amount of food for high performing athletes.
Yes. Yes. I just think that's like the big key message is just understanding that like almost all of us females, women need to eat more. That's just end of sentence. Like it just, I know it seems counterintuitive sometimes. You're like, but I don't want to eat more. Or like you say, like, I feel like I'm good. I just think that we're all susceptible to disordered eating habits and behaviors. And I just think like consult with your dietitian, your registered dietitian is just so invaluable to your long-term and short-term health. Because this energy deficiency can be really problematic. So we want to catch it early, you know, and if you've had a history of a stress fracture or recurring injuries, it's worth asking, would this be a consult worth preventing that moving forward? Okay. And I mean, I'm biased, but absolutely. It's worth it every time.
Yes, me too. But that's a great point too. I think even if you're feeling good right now, if you're about to enter a training cycle, if you have a history of stress fracture, it's likely there was some sort of imbalance nutritionally. So I would get ahead of the game, reach out to someone. I agree. I think anyone in any female in sport should have an RD on speed dial in their corner, even just for the basics to get started.
Yeah. And I think this is true even if you're a recreational runner. You know, I think recreational runners sort of think, oh, they can just do whatever they want. Sometimes they can. That's true. I just think like if you're planning on running a marathon, everyone who runs a marathon should consult with an RD on how much food you actually need. It's so much food and it's so much energy expenditure and caloric intake. And I just think that you do yourself a huge service by figuring that out early, so you're not getting yourself into trouble. And that's kind of, you know, what we always aim for is like keeping people healthy, keeping them running, ideally keeping them out of our physical therapy offices.
Definitely, yeah.
That is always the ideal. We can't prevent all injuries, but this is a huge window of opportunity, I think, for all athletes to know about Red S, to know that it's complex, that it can show up in all sorts of different ways, and that there's help, really accessible help.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly.
Yeah. So Steph and I will include some links to articles in our show notes if you want to read up on that. Steph is also writing a blog for Sisu on Red S that will be released sometime in the near future, which is exciting. So Steph is the gal to talk about Red S. So if you have questions about Red S specifically, I would really encourage you to reach out to Stephanie. She's very well versed, has done presentations and workshops on this, and much to her chagrin, I think has some personal experience with it as well.
Yes, absolutely. And yes, continued. Still working on all that, work in progress. But thank you, Ellie. And on our next episode, we're going to get into, as providers, physical therapists, coaches, personal trainers, chiropractors, how we can better recognize this and how we can play a larger role in getting these athletes, runners, patients in general, the help that they need.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, next episode, expect to hear a little bit more about how to, if you're a practitioner or coach of some sort, how to be able to capture this, how to be able to help athletes through it, and hopefully get them headed in the right direction. Thank you so much for listening.
Yes, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll see you next time.
See you next week. Gus of 50 miles per hour, and I just like I hit a zone 2 run like no big deal, and I was just so impressed with myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's flat here, so that's a benefit, but the wind was going. And, you know, I think logically we understand that there are certain things that are going to slow our pace down. Like wind will slow our pace down. Snow will likely slow our pace down. And illogically, we don't realize that things like sleep and cumulative fatigue and day-to-day stress should also be indicators to us that we could benefit from slowing things down. But we know that these other sort of external variables should slow us down. And the internal ones should be slowing us down too. And so I think the work of a coach and as a physical therapist is really teaching people the value they can get by doing that and continuing to practice those things and to realize like, okay, pace isn't everything. Pace is important to people who want to race. It's important to runners. It's important to me even. But in training, you have to embrace the repetition, the just willingness to show up, the consistency, the sort of monotony of it, to really start to like, I'm going to say, embrace like this really positive, enriching experience with running. That's a bias that I have. The joy of running isn't slowing down.
Nope, I would completely agree with that. I think I couldn't have said it better. Embracing the monotony, it's not always going to be exciting. It's most of the time it's not, and that's
yeah,
part of the process. And
exactly
enjoying that. And like you said, every, you know, instead of, I used to get anxious about some of my runs, like, yeah, I know this isn't going to feel that good, even though it's not a super hard workout. And when you can just slow down, you can look at more, you can, you know, just, you can talk, you can have more social runs,
yeah,
and just, yeah, really enjoy the beauty of being able to move your body in that way.
Right, right. And if you're somebody who really struggles with injury, what would you say would be the benefit of doing heart rate-based training?
I think it can definitely reduce your risk of injury. As someone who has not embraced it until later and has had many injuries, I've talked to many females who have been injury-free, and they pretty much have a similar training philosophy. They run slow most of the time. And that shouldn't be mind-blowing, but those are the women that have more longevity in the sport, and they, you know, you can just tell when you talk to them that it's about they're, you know, they want fast race times, but they just love to run.
Yeah.
And slowing down and that consistency leads to performance improvements over time. And when you're running too fast and you're not recovered, even though it feels like it's not that fast, it's that moderate intensity, you don't right. realize that your body's never recovering. And you go in this cycle of injury or performance plateau or both
right.
Over and over. And then that lack of consistency, unfortunately, it doesn't set you up well for later years.
Right. Yeah. That's very, very well said. Yeah. So.
So run slower.
Yeah. Moral of the story is practice slower running. Mm-hmm. Consider using heart rate-based training methods as a mix in your training. There's a lot of different ways to dictate intensity. Heart rate is probably the most honest, physiologically speaking. So consider adding that in. RPE is the other way, and then pace is the other way. So there's a lot of different ways. Consider getting a coach. You know, yeah. I know Steph has coaching open spots right now. So
yep.
If you need a coach, we both coach. And we can help work through that difficult process.
Yeah, when someone else is giving you instructions and checking in on your workouts, it does help keep you accountable. I do think it's important to have that accountability when no one else is watching too. But it's just a really good way to start making and learning better training decisions.
Right, exactly. Making sensible choices through your training experiences. Yeah. And if you have any questions, you can feel free to reach out to us via email. I will post our emails in the show notes and our contact information. Is there anything else you want to add, Steph?
I don't think so. Thanks again for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And If anyone wants to sponsor, send an email. We're open to that as well.
Yeah. Yes, we are. And I think that's it. Everyone have a good one. Thanks for listening.